a chance to feel like heroes too. Forever we'll win, and if we should lose, we know someday we'll go all the way. Yeah, someday we'll go all the way.
Welcome to Holy Cow, a Cubs podcast. I'm your host, Sean Holland, and we are back after a very promising first month of the season for the Cubs. They're off to a good start, despite some pretty significant injuries, but they seem to be overcoming it, at least so far. Our guest in this episode is Randall Sanders, who you know from the Behind the Yellow Line podcast and other places on Cubs Twitter. And we talk about everything that's going on with this excellent Cubs start and some of the players that are emerging and a couple of young players that have been interesting. And it's a pretty good conversation. And we talk about what's driving the Cubs and, you know, some signs that maybe this could be a pretty good thing, that even with all these injuries early on, once we start getting all the players back, the Cubs might really take off. So anyway, let's get to the conversation. I won't waste any more time. Here is Randall. Randall, welcome to Holy Cow, a Cubs podcast. It's always good to have you on.
Thanks for having me, Sean. It's been a little while since I was on with you. Happy to be back.
All right. So I guess we'll get right into this. I haven't done a podcast since right before the season. And, you know, we were talking about it was a really hard schedule for the Cubs to start the year. And they've gotten off to a very, very good start. They are 16-9 right now. And they look good. And, you know, you got to feel pretty good. But, of course, the big elephant in the room is just so many injuries. I mean, Justin Steele, Seiya Suzuki, Cody Bellinger now. Just big name guys going down, but somehow they're persevering. So what do you think of the Cubs so far?
You know, it's a testament to the depth that they put together. I think that's kind of one of the things where people were maligning going into the regular season, is what's going to happen when if this guy goes down, and they've managed to weather it so far. Like you said, they're missing their number one starting pitcher in Justin Steele. They are without Seiya Suzuki, who is having just an excellent start to the season. And unfortunately, he's on the IL with the oblique injury. They just lost Cody Bellinger to a cracked rib, two cracked ribs, even better. It seems like bad things happen anytime he plays defense against the Astros. It's almost hard to kind of get a read on what this team is. But at the same time, like you said, they are excelling right now. So, you know, it's still kind of hard to get a read on what this team is, but that may kind of be like a compliment almost, because they're excelling without all of these key players. And you kind of wonder in the back of your mind, what's it going to look like if they get all those guys back healthy and contributing? Might they go from this team that's excelling to a team that goes even beyond that? So, you know, it's a little uneven right now as far as the perception, but you'd much rather be winning without your key guys as opposed to losing and having to say, well, you know, they're missing all these guys, they'll be better. So it's a little off right now, but I'll take it.
So obviously, big storylines for the game that just happened, we're recording this Thursday night, is, first of all, Javier Assad was very solid last year. You thought, let's see, can he kind of repeat something close to that? And he's gotten in the rotation this year. And I think you could say, fair to say, he's been the Cubs' best starter. It's really great to see.
He's certainly been their most consistent. I'd like to see him maybe get through six innings one of these days. But, you know, every time he goes out there, I'm not ashamed to admit it, I kind of wonder, when is the other shoe going to drop? And it hasn't really happened this season, and it hasn't really happened in his career. He's had a couple of he's had a couple of rough outings in his career, but, you know, he's never really had a long string of starts where he's just gotten completely blown up every time. And he's just kind of quietly going out there and giving you, you know, at least five good innings every fifth day. And like we said, when you're missing the players that you are right now, that is essential. So he's just going out there, he's doing his job, and it's hard to, you know, it's hard to complain too much, other than you wish he'd be able to go a little bit deeper into the games, but you'd much rather five pretty good innings as opposed to maybe six great innings one game and then only able to go three or four the next. So yeah, I don't have a whole lot to complain about with Javier Assad to start the season.
And that might be just a general theme for this year so far is that, yeah, the Cubs have not gotten much depth from their starting pitchers. Now, I don't know, is that a trend that's repeating across baseball? It probably is a little bit, but yeah, that's the one thing about all these. You'd like to see a little bit more depth.
Yeah, and starting pitching is it's so closely monitored in the modern game, and that's not a bad thing. And especially with the rash of elbow injuries that popped up as the season started, innings are so closely monitored, pitch count is so closely monitored. And again, that's not a bad thing. I'm not going to fault organizations for really being careful with some of their most valuable commodities. The teams are more hesitant to let their guys go deep into games. We know Craig Counsell, my experience with him before being hired by the Cubs, and what a saga that was. My experience with him is watching him manage against the Cubs. Now that I'm watching him every day, if there's one thing I'm sure of, it's that he will pull a guy kind of one batter too early in his estimation, as opposed to potentially letting him go one batter too long and having to take him out of the game with the damage done. And I think there's something to that approach, but it doesn't always lend itself to long outings for the starting pitchers. We've seen a lot of outings where he's pulled a guy 4 2/3 innings, and a base runner or two base runners on. And I'm not saying that's the wrong approach, but you need the right bullpen in place to be able to support that. And it leads to some outings where you say, oh, you could let him go another batter, another two batter. And I trust that Craig Counsell has better information than I do. And I trust he's making the decision not based on nothing. I trust there's something behind the decision. It's just a little bit jarring sometimes, especially after seasons worth of David Ross, who, if anything, would kind of often let a guy go one batter too long, and the game would suffer the consequences for it.
Yeah, we're definitely seeing the opposite side of the David Ross strategy with Craig Counsell. So you're right. There's a lot of today. I mean, you see they pull Assad with two outs in the sixth inning. It's just like he's always going to be on the more cautious end, and we'll see how that works.
Yeah, and again, it's not wrong. It's just different, especially after, David Ross, I don't think was against analytics, and I don't think that the front office that signed him and then hired him as the manager would have done so if he was anti-analytics. I don't think he was anti-analytics, but I do think he was a little more willing to go with his gut sometimes versus maybe do exactly what the numbers said. And the inverse is, I'm not saying that Counsell always does exactly what those numbers say, but I do think he's a little more analytically inclined. And I think that leads to that really quick hook, or in a lot of cases, really early hook on his starting pitchers. And again, I want to keep reiterating, I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm not railing against Counsell for this. You just hope that your bullpen can stand up to that kind of usage over the course of a full season.
And funny you should mention that because one thing that you are got to be concerned about with this Cubs team is the bullpen. And obviously, Adbert Alzolay not starting out very good. He's been demoted from the closer job. Right now, it's Hector Neris, but I don't feel very good about Hector Neris in any of his appearances. But what are your thoughts on the bullpen?
Yeah, now if there's one thing that gives me a little bit of optimism, it's that bullpens can and do really flip-flop in efficacy week to month, even week to week sometimes. And we've also seen not just contending teams, but title-winning teams kind of rebuild a bullpen on the fly. If you can hit on one or two of your kind of AAA relievers who come up and are able to remain effective, if you can make a couple of trades, you can rebuild a bullpen on the fly. It's not recommended, but you can do it. And as we're talking about injured Cubs players, it's almost like they're without Alzolay because, he's not in that closer role. You were counting on him to hold that down, and that has not been the case in the early going, I'm sorry to say. And I really like Adbert Alzolay as a pitcher, and he seems like a very nice human being. So it pains me to see him struggle, but that's where it gets you. I think there's a lot of parallels to the 2015 season where Hector Rondon struggled. He was replaced in the role by Jason Mott, who was another kind of journeyman veteran. He had closing experience. He held that down for a while until Rondon could kind of get his groove back. So my hope is that Adbert is able to kind of regain his form pitching, not necessarily in the closer role. Neris is able to hold it down in that interim, and you're able to get things back in order by mid-season. I think there are some relievers at Iowa who have a good chance of impacting the big league roster this year. Cam Sanders is a name that come to mind. You have Porter Hodge, also been very effective at AAA Iowa. So I'm hoping that some combination of some guys rounding back into form and making some additions, the bullpen will go from being something that makes us all a little bit worried to keeping things a little bit calmer. But bullpens are very volatile, and as guys struggle, it's kind of hard to predict what they're going to do week to week, month to month.
And there are a couple guys that have been pleasant surprises, I would say, so far. I mean, you're getting stuff out of Wisniewski. It's only been two games, but they've been two very impressive games. Your Keegan Thompson looks a little bit closer to his 2022 form, so you're hoping there'll be some more guys like that that bubble up.
And to name someone who's been effective out of the bullpen so far is Ben Brown. And watching him start is a lot of fun because he's got that strong fastball. He's got the great power curveball. My one concern with him as a starting pitcher would be that he really only has two pitches. Now, Justin Steele is able to be effective, throwing on paper two pitches. He varies both pitches a lot. But Ben Brown has the fastball, he has the curveball. While he was starting, I was thinking, what would that be like in the bullpen? And we've seen him be used out of the bullpen with Tyone activated, and it's been pretty good so far. And like you said, the Cubs have gotten not just good relief, but good long relief from Smiley when he was not on the IL. He's on the IL now too, because half the roster is. But Smiley, Thompson, Brown, Wesneski have all been effective going multiple innings out of this Cubs bullpen. And like you said, for as much as you have guys who have underachieved so far, I think having those guys really step up to pitch multiple innings per outing, I think it's helped propel the Cubs to this hot start.
So obviously now the thing I didn't want to, it's such a bummer, but we have to talk about it. But Kyle Hendricks, it's the start to his years has been so bad. Now he's on the injured list with back tightness that, is it a real injury? I don't know. But it's
Yeah, I don't want to brag. I did kind of quietly predict a like a phantom IL stint as it kept going downward for Kyle. I think Counsell said that the back issue popped up as he was warming up for his start against the Marlins. I kind of wonder, okay, great. What was, if it's a back issue that's popped up now, what was the issue in his previous starts? So, I'm a little skeptical that he's actually hurt, but something was going to have to give, and him being off the active roster for a time, I think, was the most logical conclusion. So you hope he's able to fix whatever's wrong. It looked like he was trending in the right direction, in his start against the Marlins, and then it just went south so quickly in that. And it was a lot of soft contact, but it went south so quickly. He's going to have to figure something out. And if he doesn't, that would be a really sad way for a franchise icon to go out. You hope he can find a way to be effective the rest of the season and make it a little easier on the Cubs. But yeah, I don't want to see Kyle Hendricks go out like that. He deserves better. And it would be very painful for us to watch. It would be like a friend of the family having to leave under less than ideal circumstances. So I hope he figures it out, whatever the injury or quote unquote injury is.
Yeah, it's one of those things, I guess, things don't usually end well, especially with pro athletes, but because there's a point where you just can't do it anymore. And obviously, I hope this isn't what's happening with Kyle. Of course, what was it, 2 years ago, we thought he might be finished because he had that shoulder surgery, and you're like, is he going to come back? Is that it? And he did come back last year and was pretty good, but at some point, with every player, it's going to end eventually. So,
Yeah, Father Time is undefeated. That's the one player who has yet to be bested. You can hold him off for a while. You can delay the inevitable for a while, but Father Time comes for us all. And you would have figured Kyle Hendricks is hopefully continuing to be effective deep in his career. He's not an old man by any stretch. He's only 34 years old. He's not in his late 30s. And he certainly doesn't throw hard. It's not like he has a high-octane fastball that he has to learn to pitch without. But like you said, some guys just get to a point in their career where they can't do it anymore. And like I said, I sincerely hope that Kyle Hendricks is not at that point.
So now we'll switch over to the offense. And, you know, what was it, about a week into the season, 10 days into the season, Nico Hoerner hitting 150. People are like, man, what's up with Nico here? I mean, he's striking out more, and they claimed in the offseason he was going to be more aggressive, but it seems like it's going horribly. And then, I don't know, a switch flipped or something, and now he's hotter than any player in baseball. It's just tearing the cover off the ball, getting 400 the last, like, 10 games, and I'm shocked at the turnaround.
Yeah, and that's fun with small sample sizes. I kind of like looking at guys' season lines this time of year, even though we are basically a month into the season at this point. You know, we record this the evening of Thursday, April 25th, I believe. Opening night was, what, 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, tonight. Yep. So, you know, it's still small sample size for a lot of guys. But like you said, a good week can push a guy's line right now up into very rarefied air. And that's one of the, I think, the fun things about the early part of the season is that it can shift. You know, Christopher Morel, his season line looked great after a week, and it's, you know, 2 weeks even, and it's been pretty rough since. Like, it has dropped precipitously. But Nico Hoerner, I think we know, is too talented a player. He wasn't going to spend the whole season hitting as poorly as he was. And it seems like with Ian Happ having to be in and out of the lineup a little bit, and with some other guys being out of the lineup and having to necessitate other changes, it seems like him taking off has coincided, at least in part, with him leading off a lot of the time. And I don't think that's a coincidence either. That's where he hit most of last season. And we know he had a decent offensive year last year. So I think he maybe enjoys that role. And I don't think it's a coincidence that his hot streak has coincided with him batting leadoff a lot more.
Yeah, you know, something else that I think other people have been talking about, but them starting to, you know, is it possible that Mike Tauchman is actually a pretty good player?
Is it possible? You know, I'm always super hesitant to rely on journeyman guys like that. But, you know, we now have, as far as Tauchman's Cubs career, coming into today, Tauchman had taken, as a Cub, and I'm bringing this up on Baseball Reference in front of me, Tauchman had taken 468 plate appearances as a Chicago Cub, coming into today, 128 games, and the production has been pretty solid. Getting on base as a Cub, 368 clip. There's not a whole lot of slug in there, but there's enough that the OPS is certainly not, it's at least league average. I think Tauchman has settled into a very capable role as a fourth outfielder, a fifth outfielder. We've seen that he can step in and, you know, not be a complete black hole when you need someone to step in the outfield as a result of injuries. I would still be very hesitant if he is a guy who's starting every day for a full season. I think at the end of the season, that would not look great, but he's proven a very capable bench guy. And again, this is a guy the Cubs got for nothing. On a minor league deal, they promoted him in 2023 from AAA Iowa. And he has, I think, acquitted himself very well since. So, you know, I don't know that, I don't know that I'm quite ready to declare a second summer of Tauchman, but I do know that I don't feel completely lost when he's at the plate. And you and I have, as Cubs fans, have seen a lot of players take plate appearances as a Cubs, some very recently, that when they go to the plate, you go, oh boy, there's just nothing here. And I don't think Tauchman is that. And again, for a fourth or fifth outfielder, that's perfectly fine.
Exactly. And, you know, that's the one thing. He works bad. He works bad bats. He's very good at that.
Yeah, he's a pesky little SOB. Was at the bottom of the lineup where he wasn't hitting, but he was walking a ton. Again, now with the injuries, he's hitting higher in the lineup a lot. And he's still producing decently. Again, there's not going to be a lot of power from him. There's not going to be a lot of slug. But if you can get on base in that number two spot ahead of bigger bats, you, again, you're doing your job. And he's capable defensively. Again, I think they have better defensive center fielders on the roster, but he's fine in a corner. I think he's acclimated to, you know, playing the corner and playing the Wells at Wrigley after, you know, a little under a season now. So I more or less trust him out there. And again, I keep coming back to it, as a fourth or fifth outfielder, as a bench guy, all you ask for is the guy to not be a complete black hole. And I'm proud to say that Mike Tauchman very nicely accomplishes not being a complete black hole.
All right. So now I think I'm going to make my little case for Christopher Morel's slump is not as bad as people think it is, because though he's not getting hits, that's true. But his walk rate is way up. His strikeout rate is down. He's, you know, working at bats, seeing pitches. And I really think once he starts connecting with the ball, but he's getting to the point now where he's working counts into his favor. And once he gets into that situation more often, he's going to really take off. That's my theory. Now, maybe they'll be proven wrong, but I don't feel that bad about a slump.
Yeah, you know, it's been a pretty rough go for him the last while. There are signs he's coming out of it. I think the quality of contact is starting to improve. And like you said, the ability to get on base, even with this slump he's been in, I think there's a lot of reason for optimism there. His walk rate all of last season, in 2023 season, was 8.4. Right now, he's still at an 11% walk rate, even with this slump he's in. The strikeout rate is down 31% in 2023. He's 19% right now. So he has improved both of those. And I honestly, I'm with you. I think that once he breaks out of this, and, you know, I think that once the hits start falling and he starts making loud contact again, I think he's going to be just fine. And even with him, like we said, not hitting at the moment, there have been some very positive trends to start the season. And he's at 100 plate appearances, which, you know, again, is at the point at which trends start to settle and you can tell whether they're flukish or whether there's something to keep an eye on. So I think there's very encouraging signs. I do worry that he's still dealing with like a wrist or a finger injury from a check swing he sustained on the West Coast road trip.
Yeah, something with his finger for sure.
Yeah, so I do worry he's still dealing with that, and that's sapping a lot of his ability to make loud contact and to make good contact. But we can see it's not affecting his eyes. He does not have any issues with his eyes at the moment. And that's good. He's taking himself out of fewer at-bats, and we've seen it throughout his career. He'll get that Javi-like tendency to just swing from his shoe tops at a pitch at his shoe tops, not productively. And we've seen less of that. Not none of that, because, you know, he hasn't changed, I think, that drastically. But we've seen less of that. We've seen a lot of steps in the right direction.
Yeah, it's one of those things where the process is good, but the results aren't happening right now.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. The process is good. The results are not great right now, but you'd maybe rather have that than the other way around, because, you know, if you had great results but poor process, you would maybe start to wonder when the results are going to catch up to the process. When he's doing the right things right now, again, he's striking out less, he's walking more, you trust that that is eventually going to lead to better results. And I think when he gets there, I think he's going to prove that everyone's there, or not everyone's, that those who have faith in him were not wrong to do so.
All right. So I guess another guy who was, if we would have had this podcast 2 weeks ago, would have been the top thing we were talking about, Michael Busch, but now he's kind of returned to earth, as we kind of figured he would. I mean, getting home runs in 5 straight games, that's not going to keep up. But what do you think of him overall?
Yeah, you know, I think he's used this phrase for Tucker, and I think he's also acquitted himself very nicely. We know he's had a bit of a rough homestand. There's been a lot of strikeouts, but I think the at-bats are still good. I think the plate appearances are still good. I think he's proving that he can hang in there against lefties. He's maybe doesn't need to be platooned, and I think that played a role in Garrett Cooper being taken off the roster. I think because they anticipated needing him more as the short side of that first base platoon, And they really haven't needed them, with Bush showing that he at least deserves the opportunity to try and hit against lefties. I think he's been a pretty solid player so far. I think he's a couple of things to iron out defensively with the glove. We've seen a couple of balls squirt through the glove at first base, and that's a bad place for that to happen. But I've been impressed with the reflexes. I've been impressed with the athleticism and the range at first base. He's made a couple of really nice plays. I think there's improvement. I think he's already improved there, and I think there's improvement to come. I don't think, like you said, I don't think anybody thought he was the player that he was homering five straight games, but I think when it all is said and done, he's going to grade out as a very solid first baseman for the Cubs. And as a kind of a buy low candidate, a guy who was blocked in LA at just about all of his positions, that's a pretty good get. You gave up a pair of A-ball prospects for him in Zaire Hope and Jackson Ferris as well. So yeah, you gave up a pair of A-ball players for him, and you got a major league ready first baseman. I'm not ready to call him the second coming of Anthony Rizzo just yet, but I think he's been better than expected in the early going. And there's some regression, I think, to the mean in the affirmative, and some regression to the mean in the negative still coming. But I think he's going to grade out as being a very solid everyday player when all is said and done.
Kind of in the similar vein to that, is that I you never want to say a guy's not going to be good, but Matt Mervis, it's just this is his second time up, and he's just not looked competitive at all at the plate, and it didn't go good last year, and just I don't know about him.
Yeah, there hasn't been much from him. I don't believe he has a hit since the Cubs promoted him this week. And, that's a very, very limited sample size. You'd like to see a little more from him, especially because some of the reason he may be up may be to try and kind of showcase him in a trade. Like, hey, look at all these, hey, all you teams out there with, pitching on the trade block. Look at this great first baseman we got right here. He hits left-handed. He's got power. He's an okay glove. Might there be a deal to be made? So I think there's an element of auditioning in promoting him as they did this week. But you hope he'll turn it around too. And if he doesn't, I don't know that you're, I don't know that they're counting on him for much. I think it was very telling that they didn't bring him up again last September. Now, the shrunken September rosters compared to seasons in the fair, the not the distant past, but the not the recent past either, probably played a role in that. You only get the two extra roster spots each September now. But Mervis was not one of those, did not occupy one of those roster spots. And I think that is very telling that the Cubs maybe kind of aren't counting on him in the short term. If he's able to give them something, if he's able to give them really good production out of that DH spot, that's great. But it feels like they potentially are ready to move on if they feel it benefits the team to do so.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those, they've given Bush the same chance and he's run with it, and Mervis didn't, and that's kind of it's a harsh world. That's how, baseball, but if someone else grabs the chance, they're going to move ahead of you.
Yeah, that's the nature of the game, is you get your chances. If you make the most of them, you keep getting more chances. And if it just doesn't happen for you, eventually they will start giving your chances to someone else. So I'm rooting for Mervis, but again, it does feel like the Cubs are not counting on him for much, and they will be ready to start giving those chances to other people if other people start proving worthy of them.
So the final thing I'll ask about, of course, the star of the game today, Pete Crow Armstrong. He one of those things, he didn't get his first hit with 16 at bats, but man, did he make the most of his first career hit when he got it. An absolute bomb home run. And what do we think so far?
What a time to do it. I know he struck out twice against Verlander, one of which was on in an at bat where he managed to work the count to 3-1. He ended up striking out. I don't I, contrary to Mervis, I don't think the Cubs are ready to give up on PCA anytime soon. I think they have seen what he can do for a team offensively on the base paths when he does reach. I think the defense is going to buy him a lot of chances, more so than Mervis. Like, that's just a, I think you'd agree, is an unfortunate reality of the game, that an elite defensive outfielder is probably going to keep getting a lot more chances than a guy who's limited to first base. But you know that has to feel great for him. You know it was wearing on him all season long to have not gotten his first major league hit in his short time in the major leagues last season. It's good to see him get that out of the way. And I hope that opens the floodgates. You know, he's got his first hit, his first RBI, his first home run. He gets them all out of the way with one great swing of the bat. You know, I hope he just goes on and just goes on a tear from here. I hope he's constantly on base. I hope he's constantly causing trouble for the opposing defense. So I hope this is the start of good things for him, especially because you're going to need that again with Bellinger out for a while. Bellinger had really picked it up before fracturing his ribs, running into the wall at Wrigley. You're going to need to replace that somewhere. And if PCA can start contributing offensively, that's going to go a great deal towards helping them stay afloat with Bellinger out.
And that's what you're hoping for. And, the one thing you will say is about when you follow him in the minors, everywhere he goes at first, he does not hit very well. But then he starts slowly getting more confidence, and by the end, he's hitting great at the levels he's at. So I'm sure the major leagues will probably be very similar.
Yeah, and that's the hope. And again, development isn't linear. So like you said, some guys take time to adjust. And, you know, it felt like he went so long without his first major league hit, but he was 0 for 10 last season. He got 10 at bats, not necessarily plate appearances, but at bats last season. That's, you know, if he and he did that without playing every day. If you are playing every day and you're getting 4 plate appearances a day, 10 at bats is 2.5 games. So it seemed a lot more extreme than it was, but it was a very small sample size. And I personally am not ready to give up on Pete Crow Armstrong on the basis of 10 games last season and a very, very tiny handful of games this season.
No, I totally agree. But that's how the internet works. If you start out slow, they're done.
That's right. It's a game of extremes. You either produce immediately or you're gone in the eyes of certain people. And fortunately, organizations are at least a little bit more patient than that.
Yes. All right. So I guess I will ask you if you've got anything to plug. Where can people find you on the internet?
Boy, they can find me all over the internet. I'm everywhere. You can find me on our podcast. That's at BTYL Podcast on Twitter, the Behind the Yellow Line podcast with, of course, Ronan and Jeremy. You have joined us previously, so you can find us there again on Twitter. That's at BTYL Podcast. You can find my personal account if you are so inclined, and if you're not, I really don't blame you. I promise I don't take it personally, but I am at Randall J. Sanders. You can find my work also as part of Numbers MLB. That's at Numbers MLB. Anytime somebody comes up, gets traded, changes numbers, whenever they get a new jersey, you can find it there. So, yeah, you can find me everywhere. You know, 2/3 of the earth covered by water, and I've got the other third, but only on Twitter though.
That's it. And if when things go wrong, you've got great rants, but this year there haven't been as many rants, which is
Yeah, you know, there. It, I promise you, they've been in my head plenty. Like Edward Elzelay giving up a game-tying home run to Travis Jankowski, of
yes.
all people, on opening night, a guy with 10 career home runs, something like that, coming into a guy who I did not like almost a decade ago when he was with the Padres and he was being a little pest to the Cubs as they were playing out there. It's 2024 and he's still bothering me. So I promise you, I was thinking it, but you know, you trying to keep things sanitary, trying to make it so that if someone does come across my timeline, they don't think me a complete loon. They at least, you know, maybe have to follow me for like a week before they realize I'm a complete loon. So we're trying to be more even keeled this season. We'll see how long it lasts. I make no promises, but we're trying.
That's right. As long as the Cubs keep winning, maybe it'll be easier.
That's right. You know, the Cubs keep winning generally reduces my stress. It generally makes me a happier person. And it just seems to me like the Cubs should keep doing it.
I completely agree. All right. Well, thank you for coming on, Randall.
I appreciate you having me.
You can follow me on Twitter at STH85. You can get the podcast on the Apple Podcast app or Spotify, and I post them on CubsInsider.com. You can always find them there. And yeah, make sure to leave a rating and a review if you go on Apple. And I just like to know that people are listening. And if you want to get a message to me, just hit me up on Twitter and I can respond. Or you can comment on the Cubs Insider article. But yeah, just Cubs are playing good. And let's see if we can keep it going.